Welcome to Radioactive Magazine. We will discuss the integrity of election procedures in Kansas and Missouri with Janet Milkovich, president of the League of Women Voters of Johnson County, Kansas, and Greg Woodham and Patty Evans with the Observer Corps of the League of Women Voters of Kansas City, Jackson, Clay, and Flint Counties, Missouri. Greg has been observing the preparations of the Kansas City Election Board, and Patty has been watching the Clay County Election Board. An additional disclaimer: only presidents of league chapters are authorized to speak for the league. That includes Janet, but not Greg or Patty. They will discuss here their personal observations, which should not be construed as an official league position. I'm Spencer Graves. So, Greg, election security, or Patty, has become a frequent news topic. What advice can you give voters?
Well, I think our advice for the voters would be to be informed on how local election authorities work to keep your ballots secure. And we believe that, or I believe, that an informed voter will, as I have, gain confidence in the security of their ballot.
Okay, great. Thank you. And how have you informed yourselves about election security? What makes you qualified to speak on the subject?
Sure, I'll take that. This is Greg. Well, as members of the League of Women Voters Observer Corps, what we do is we attend meetings of government agencies, and our goal is to make sure that their proceedings are done in a transparent way and compliant with sunshine laws. Now, when we do this with the election board, we are not only watching how they are conducting their business in a transparent way, but we are watching all of the steps they take to be compliant with state law. So what that means is we've been attending all of the pre- and post-election testing. As a matter of fact, I was at the Kansas City Election Board pre-election testing of the tabulators. So all of that gives us incremental experience and knowledge about how all these boards operate. And one of the things we're hoping to do here is to convey the incremental confidence we get from watching those proceedings to the public.
So what in particular are some of the things that you saw that increase your confidence in the process?
Well, it's really a number of cumulative things. It's not just one thing. For example, we note that neither the machines nor the tabulators are connected to the internet. We note that every ballot or every vote produces a paper ballot. And the paper ballot is really one of the most important parts of election security, because and it gives confidence to the voters, because when the voter votes, they can see the ballot and they can actually see their vote before it's put into the tabulator. The other thing is the ballot produces not only the outcome of the election, but it's retained and it serves as an audit trail. The other thing we note is all of the pre- and post-election testing that I've talked about, but we also witness all of the, let's call it bipartisan chain of custody that goes on. So all of those things together is what really gives us confidence.
Right. So bipartisan chain of custody. Explain that just a bit more.
Sure. Anytime you have the movement of ballots from a precinct back to
ballots or equipment, right?
Exactly. The ballots, the equipment, there has to be bipartisan observation of that movement, but there's also a sign off to testify that bipartisan chain of custody has been followed. So you actually will have an audit of that particular notion of bipartisan chain of custody. This also happens, for example, with the equipment, when the equipment is taken out of a cage, when it's placed in a cage, when it's sealed. So all of the movement of ballots and machinery happens in the view of at least four eyes, and each pair of eyes is from a different party. So that ensures that there's no partisan advantage that's given to any particular side in any election. And that's, if you think about any game, every game you have, you're trying to make sure that you have fairness. And I'm not calling elections games, but any sort of a contest, let's say, and that's what elections are. You want to make sure that there's fairness and balance here. And that's what we get with bipartisan chain of custody.
And yeah.
Continue.
Oh, Spencer, this is Patty. I just wanted to add something to what Greg said.
Please.
Those bipartisan teams work on just about every facet of the election process, from the start of planning the election through the end and verifying results. There is always a bipartisan team working together every step of the way.
Janet, how does that work in Kansas?
It works similarly in Kansas. Our League of Women Voters, we've taken a tour of the secure area where the machinery is kept. We've had the same explanation that Greg and Patty talked about, that they're not connected to the internet. We have worked to deflat ballots, and there has to be a Republican, a Democrat, and an independent working together to deflat ballots. There can be no conversation. Deflap is when the mail-in ballots come, you open them and flatten them out.
Oh, deflap.
That is one process. Yeah, so they call it deflap. But while you're doing that, you're not allowed to talk because there can't be any electioneering. So then we've also seen where it goes from there, how they're in batches, how they're recorded, where they go to input. So we've gotten to be a part of the whole cycle.
So I could never work for the election board because I could not keep my mouth shut, right?
You know what, Spencer? That was my problem, too. I had to be corrected a couple of times. I didn't electioneer, but I just felt the need to have a conversation with all these people I didn't know. So I got in trouble, but we want to follow the rules.
Absolutely. Missouri has a new election law. What is it?
HB 1878.
So what's special about 1878?
It's got everything. It's a 57-page law. But relative to our topic, there are a number of provisions that relate to election security, and I'll mention them. One is the mandate that no voting machine or no voting equipment be connected to the internet. And again, that has already happened in say the Kansas City area, and actually in most of Missouri. The other end is the paper ballot, and then there are a number of incremental cybersecurity provisions that relate to professional staff doing the monitoring of the equipment. That's probably more acute, or let's say novel, for some of these smaller areas where they haven't had the resources for that. So that's an incremental provision. So all of that gives, and this is something that the Secretary of State, Jay Ashcroft, has been very enthusiastic about. So those are additions to the law and the mechanics of election administration in Missouri. Now, there are other parts of the bill that are not directly related to ballot security, but that are more controversial. One of them, it has to do with photo ID. Another one that is generally embraced and applauded is 2 weeks of no excuse absentee voting, which is actually something that, Janet, you can correct me on this, but something that Kansas already has. So those are some of the new things. The other thing is that's controversial is a stepped up audit program that the Secretary of State, audit of the voter rolls that the Secretary of State would initiate.
Right. So that reminds me of the voter ID and the audit and so forth. Reminds me of the famous Fish versus Kobach case that was decided a few years ago, where the where Judge Julia Robinson noted that that basically the iceberg of voter of individual voter fraud was at best an icicle. Kobach was able to document 36 non-citizens who were registered to vote in Kansas elections, as compared to 400 people whose birth date was after their date of registration. I don't know if they voted before they were born, but but the Kansas election voter information system said that they registered before they were born. So Judge Robinson said that that was consistent with administrative error, right? And of course, gerrymandering is about 1,000 times or more has a serious impact on the state. In the public, and this kind of stuff doesn't threaten the integrity of election. Kobach said the League of Women Voters is a communist organization. Your comment?
Well, the League of Women Voters does not endorse or speak against any political candidate or party. My comment to you is you're getting me all riled up, Spencer. And I have to curtail the way I'm feeling for that. You know, and then the other word that comes to mind is unsubstantiated.
Exactly.
So, you know, I would just say, how do you spell unsubstantiated?
Yeah.
Well, and we could just park on that.
That's too big a word for the radio.
Yeah.
Are there other important things you want voters to know about the election procedures in Kansas and Missouri?
In Kansas, something that's a little bit different than Missouri is, well, the names we assign to our election commissioners, those in charge of the election officers, we refer to as commissioners. But, you know, it's the election process. Our commissioner is appointed by the Secretary of State, and the Secretary of State has committees that conduct interviews with candidates. So all this to say, there's a process established and protocols established to even determine who the election commissioner is. So it doesn't give one person does not have the power to mess up an election at one election office. You know, I fully believe that. And in Johnson County, our election commissioner, Fred Sherman, he spent a year being trained by Connie Schmidt, our former election commissioner, and security issues. So, you know, everything is so intentional and so well thought out and checked and rechecked. I just feel like voters have the right to, I think voters should be assured that things are going smoothly. Commissioner Sherman also has been on our league program, and his predecessor Connie Schmidt was too. And they really talk us through the process from registration, casting a vote, how the vote is processed, you know, what do they do? Auditing the vote. You know, there's just so much that's established. So Greg was talking about he thinks in absolutes sometimes because he's from the investment world. And that I think the voting process is a series of absolutes. You got to follow the law.
Right.
Well, I want to build on Janet's comments there in Missouri. To go back to what Janet said about there's no single person that the elections in Kansas depend on. Well, in Missouri, there are 116 election jurisdictions, and they are each independently administered. So that should give comfort to the voter that in terms of any sort of, let's say, election, there's no single point of access. There's no one person that can alter the machinery of 116 jurisdictions.
Right.
That's a great point, Greg.
We are discussing the integrity of election and procedures in Kansas and Missouri with Janet Milkovich, president of the League of Women Voters of Johnson County, Kansas, and Greg Woodhams and Patty Evans of the Observer Corps of the League of Women Voters of Kansas City, Jackson, Clay, and Platte Counties, Missouri. So just to back up, what's the League of Women Voters?
Go ahead,
Patty.
Sure, the League of Women Voters. It's a great organization, and it's a nonprofit organization in the United States that was formed in 1920 to help women take a larger role in public affairs after they fought so hard and won the right to vote. And at first, it was just women, but as Greg can let you know, in 1973, they said, we'll let men in too. And we have quite a few members of the league that are male. So I think that's terrific. It's a terrific organization.
I agree. Question on terminology. I'm sorry. Were you going to say something, Janet?
This is Janet. I was going to just add to that we're nonpartisan, as we talked about, and we encourage inform and active voter participation in government. And we essentially empower people to vote and to be informed, and we continue to defend democracy. The League of Women Voters has been in Johnson County for 70 years. So the 102-year-old League of Women Voters of the U.S., we've all had these really huge, what would you call, polarizing issues, whether it be the right for women to vote, the right for Black people to vote, so many other issues right now, the amendment. But we just keep plugging away. And I think it's really important for people to understand, if you're not engaged with government on the local level, the state level, federal level, you're giving up a really important privilege, and you're giving your voice to somebody else.
Well put. Question on terminology. Does the league have local chapters or units or what?
The league, some people call it chapters. The term we use, I'll let the Missouri side speak for themselves, but in Kansas, there are 9 leagues, and the leagues are identified by the area where they're located. Unfortunately, we don't have one in Cheyenne County, Spencer. I did check.
I'm from Cheyenne County, so she wanted to check on that.
Yeah, I wanted to check.
I kind of know that. I checked that myself. But
Have nine leagues on the Kansas side, located around the state. Some of the leagues are as small as 15 people, and then our Johnson County League is 350 members.
Plus a statewide league.
We have a state league that's comprised of members of the local leagues.
Okay, so you can't be, an individual cannot be a member of the state league. You can only be a member of a local league.
The individual becomes a member of the state league by joining a local league, and part of our dues support the work of the state league. So it's a little bit of a difference in what you're saying. It's different for Patty and Greg.
I think there are 10 in Missouri, correct?
Right.
And then, for example, in our league here in Kansas City is League of Women Voters Kansas City, but Platte, Jackson, Clay counties. So it's really three counties plus Kansas City proper.
And if someone is in Cass County, they'll join probably the Kansas City League anyway, even though their name is not in their county's name is not in your name, right?
That's exactly right. We have some really valuable members from Cass County. And as a matter of fact, as part of our work here on elections, we actually did interview the Cass County Board. So Cass County is contiguous to Jackson County.
Same for us.
And Wyandotte County, Janet?
Exactly. We do a lot of collaboration with Wyandotte County. We're even looking in our strategic plan, we're looking at how we can merge or we could rebrand to include League of Women Voters of Johnson and Wyandotte, and our our Kansas City side, they've already crossed that hurdle. They've already.
Well, it's but this more than a mouthful. It's just the name of the local league.
Yes. Yes, it is.
So what do you recommend for someone from Cheyenne County, Kansas, or Hannibal, Missouri, who don't happen to have a local league very close? What do they do?
They could join the National League and get all the benefits of the league, because LWVUS has a newsletter. They have information. They have call to actions. Mm-hmm. And then they could also participate in the league that's nearest them, because since COVID, we've all learned to conduct our meetings via Zoom.
Yeah.
So you can live anywhere in the state or either side of the state line and still avail yourself of the programs that we offer monthly and our calls to action.
So let's see, Kansas, I got Great Bend, Wichita, Salina, Manhattan, Topeka, Lawrence, Leavenworth, and Johnson County. And Missouri, I got Columbia, Joplin, Mexico, Moberly, Sedalia, Southeast Missouri, Southwest Missouri, St. Louis, Tri-Lakes, and then the Kansas City, Jackson, Clayton, Platte County. So that I did that so I could pick Hannibal because it was far removed from it's like Cheyenne. It's way out there. It's not close to another league. So does the National League have a position on election security?
League of Women Voters U.S. has a really good statement that I could read to you.
Please.
Okay, this is what they say. I am quoting, "Election security is about voter confidence and participation. The more confident voters are in our election systems, the more confident they will feel that their voices have been heard and that impacts their participation." And I think that sums it up really well.
That's great. And the Johnson County League also has an observer corps, right?
Yes, we do.
Go ahead.
I started out once I joined the league and moved after moving here from Chicago. I became an observer for Overland Park, for the mm-hmm. Overland Park City Council. But we have an observer corps at every level. We have education, Board of Education observer corps, county observer corps, city observer corps. We just really try to stay informed. And the statewide league also has a legislative observer corps that I participated in for a while. So we really try to call out the truth and hold people accountable and make sure that that information is communicated to members across the state. And I'm sure that that's with our partners in Missouri, right?
Absolutely. And yes. Actually, one of the most important items on our checklist is always whether or not meetings are held in compliance with sunshine laws. And what that means is if there is a meeting, if they've announced it to the public, if the public can attend certain events, and public participation, those sorts of things, and public participation and the public knowing that it's open, that actually, I believe, is helpful for instilling confidence in the way government works or any government agency works. And I think most of the agencies that we observe understand that, and they willingly do their business transparently.
You know, when I was an observer at the Overland Park City Council, they really did not want to have public comment time. And we went through meetings, committees, you know, listened to the fears of the council members, why they didn't want it. Then they thought, well, maybe we'll do it, but we'll put it at the end of the meeting. And sometimes the meetings don't end till 2 a.m. And they were just really had a lot of fear. So we asked them, well, what are you afraid of? I was the observer at the time. So with all due respect, I'm like, well, what is it that you're afraid that's going to happen? And after years of working towards this, not just the league, but the city, they initiated it and they found it worked very well. and the citizens feel more involved in their community. You know, the some of the council members said, well, you could just come to me directly. And our point was, well, I could go to my Ward 5 council member, but is he going to share that with all the other wards? That and the council members are going to ultimately vote? Is he going to share that with the mayor? So we wanted that public time so that we can make sure our voices were heard. And that's pretty much our standard for all observation.
That's wonderful, Janet. Full disclosure, by the way. Okay. So I'm giving a signal. I got to wrap up here. Just one more question. Janet, is the Kansas League currently suing the state of Kansas?
Yes.
Tell us about that very briefly.
We don't take it lightly to issue a lawsuit. But last year, Kansas passed voter suppression laws, and they were House Bill 2183 and 2332. And the result of one of those laws, and it wasn't very clearly written, was that if someone that we're trying to register to vote perceives that we're with the election office, we would be committing a felony crime and could serve time in jail and pay a fine of $1,500. So as a result of that legislation, you know, we usually register in excess of 6,000 people a year to vote. We weren't allowed to do that for the last year and a half, but we found workaround. We found ways to engage people legally and empower them to register by providing QR codes that they can use on their own devices. Once again, the league is not going to be stopped by inappropriate. Oh, boy. The league is not going to be stopped. We'll find a way to do this work legally because it's that important.
Yes, wonderful, Janet. And I think so I'll give Craig time for the comment and then I'll have the wrap up, or I should give the wrap up now. Give your comment and I'll give the wrap up.
Okay, so I'll do the comment first. For those who haven't gotten the message yet, which hopefully is not more than a handful, we have a primary election coming up in Kansas, August 2nd. On that ballot is a constitutional amendment. Now, we at KKFI do not take a position for or against the amendment, but I want to explain to you what the amendment does and do a little bit of fact-checking on what some of the ads have been telling. So, you can't turn the TV on without seeing nonstop ads on the Constitutional Amendment right now. So what happened is back in, I believe it's 2019, maybe a little bit sooner, there was a case where some Kansas legislature passed some restrictions on abortion. That went to the state Supreme Court. The state Supreme Court found that those were unconstitutional because they found the Constitution in Kansas guarantees women's certain rights, that there is a privacy and an autonomy right. What is on the ballot is a proposed amendment that would undo what the state Supreme Court said and make it clear that there is no privacy or autonomy right. Your self-control right over your body. Now, some of the ads are saying that the Constitutional Amendment, at least it's claimed that some of the ads are suggesting that the amendment would ban abortion in all cases, including incest, rape, and medical. There are other ads that is saying that the amendment will not do that and won't do that. It's kind of in between. Most of what it does, it would enable the state legislature to proceed to pass laws regulating abortion. The amendment itself will not ban abortion. That allows the legislature to do that if it passes. Of course, since they passed that once back in 2019, most likely their intent is to pass it again. the legislation that everybody has reason to believe was passed would not allow for any exceptions. So regardless of how you come down on the issue, if you want to preserve the right to abortion, particularly in the case of rape, incest, and to protect the mother's health, you will want to vote no on it. If you think it should, if you want the legislature to be able to ban it, then you want to vote yes. In some instances where this really gets extreme is with the medical issues. If the legislature bans it without any exceptions, one example of that is ectopic pregnancy. For those who don't know what that is, that's where the baby does not get down into the uterus, the egg doesn't get down to the uterus, and it starts growing in the tubes. A baby cannot survive. That is impossible. If the baby is stuck in the tube, it will die. The problem is that if you don't remove it and you let it, and you wait till it dies on its own, and then what happens is the woman's tubes will rupture, and there's an excellent chance that the woman's life will also be terminated because of damage to the other or surrounding organs. So I want to make that clear, so regardless of which way you want to vote, at least you understand what the amendment does.
Thank you. Thank you, Greg. Okay, we've been discussing, before Craig's comment, the integrity of election procedures in Kansas and Missouri with Janet Milkovich, president of the League of Women Voters of Johnson County, Kansas, and Greg Woodhams and Patty Evans with the Observer Corps of the League of Women Voters of Kansas City, Jackson, Clay, and Platte Counties, Missouri. Tune in next week to hear representatives of PeaceWorks Kansas City discuss their annual Hiroshima Nagasaki Remembrance event scheduled for August 7th of this year, 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Kansas City National Security Campus at 14510 Botts Road, Kansas City, Missouri. And there is more on this topic at the description of this episode at kkfi.org. I'm Spencer Graves. Craig LeBeau is at the controls. Thanks for listening.